From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. For many of us, the last 2 years of pandemic life have been filled with uncertainty, grief, and just feeling spent. And that's been especially true for people whose work required them to surf the waves of COVID-19, like doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals. One thing that makes that work a little easier, though, is the support of friends who understand what you're going through. We're joined now by two friends on the front lines, both pulmonologists who've treated some of the most critically ill COVID patients and supported each other along the way. They have a new podcast called Get Better out this month, in which they talk about not only their experiences during the pandemic, but also where they learn about other topics in medicine, ranging from mental health to gender-affirming care. Dr. Kalila Gates is a pulmonologist with Northwestern Medical Group and assistant professor and assistant dean of medical education at the Feinberg School of Medicine. Also with us is Dr. Michelle Prickett, a pulmonologist also with Northwestern Medical Group and Northwestern Memorial Hospital. She's associate professor and medical director of respiratory care at the Feinberg School of Medicine. As I mentioned, they have a new podcast called Get Better with a third colleague and friend, Dr. Susan Russell. Dr. Russell is treating ICU patients this morning and not able to join us. But Dr. Gates, Dr. Prickett, welcome to The 21st Show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Listeners, as always, we invite you to join the conversation. What questions do you have for a doctor in this new phase of the pandemic? You can join our conversation by calling 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21stshow. So to both of you, I want to start with, you know those memes where it's two pictures, how it started, how it's going? So let's say January 2020 and today. Dr. Gates, I'll begin with you. How did it start? How's it going?
How did it start? Pure terror, unknown, what's going to happen, trying to be prepared for whatever is to come. And how it's going is settling back into some sense of normalcy. It's not normal as it was before January 2020, but we have an understanding of this illness and an understanding of how to live with COVID. And so I personally feel we're in a much better place, thankfully, than we were in 2020. So it's a brighter day now.
Dr. Prickett, what about you? Same question. How'd it start? How's it going?
I think I see the humor in that. I actually have given several talks on this, and I have a before times picture of me and my life before COVID, and then a current times, full PPE, all of that. And so we've definitely seen the change. As Kalila said, you know, when this all started, it was really unknown. We've never seen this. We've been doing this job for quite a bit of time, but had never really seen anything like this. And then to have it come all at once, that was hard. And then to have it come back in the waves, that was probably even harder on some levels to see, you know, you think you get over it and you think it's behind you, and then it comes back up. I do agree, like we're in a better place than we were before in terms of understanding the science, understanding what's needed, kind of knowing how to protect yourself and others. It's more of the concern about, you know, what's the safest model for the times that we're in right now, and how do we prepare for any variant? Because I think where we are now is we know what is potentially possible that we never expected before, and how do we kind of move forward into the future and take best use of that.
Yeah, you raised a number of points I want to come back to about, you know, how prepared you were for a pandemic based on your training, and also, you know, this idea of expectations in the vaccine. Let me start with that, the vaccine question. I think a lot of us, right, 2 years ago, we were told, gosh, we don't know. It could be years, maybe, you know, a year if we're lucky before we get a vaccine. And in fact, we were pretty lucky, I think, based on obviously decades of the groundwork being laid for the vaccines. But, you know, even a year ago, a lot of us were hoping the vaccine would be a turning point in this pandemic. Dr. Gates, I wonder if you shared that hope, and did it live up to your expectations?
Absolutely. We were all looking for a vaccine that would basically take the edge off of this pandemic. And it has changed the landscape of what COVID-19 looks like. Before We had the vaccine, our ICUs were flooded with patients. And what we see with the vaccine is that, yes, we are still having breakthrough cases where we have the virus despite the vaccine, but our ICUs did not get flooded like they did in that first major wave. For me, that is success with vaccination. Keeping people out of the hospital, keeping people from getting severe illness from SARS-CoV-2 is successful in my opinion. And I think if we continue to focus on that data and understand that it has been successful, we can get to the place that we need to be from a vaccination standpoint.
Dr. Prickett, do you remember the day you got your vaccine, what that was like?
Oh, I think I cried. I didn't cry getting it because I had too many cameras on me because it was such a really glorious day. And I've been talking about how important it was. And really, you know, I told anyone that wanted to listen, if you want me to come talk about this vaccine and really understand the science behind it and understand why it came as quickly as it did and why it was such really a miracle of science that we got it as quickly as we did based off of years of research beforehand. So it was just a relief. So I got back to my office and I just, you know, kind of exhaled for the first time in a long time. You know, I think that day I really thought like, oh, it's good. This is the, you know, the beginning of the end, not expecting another wave to come. But as clearly mentioned, it's, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. It kept people that were vaccinated out of the ICU for the most part. So people with normal immune systems, even if we get the virus, like you're not going to end up on our ICU. And that was a big success. So I still find this to be a wonderful addition to helping us get through this vaccine and encourage, or this pandemic, and encourage everyone to get vaccinated, especially, you know, a third dose. I think that's the message right now. This is a 3-dose series that we're learning. So that booster is really your final dose for the third of the series to keep you out of the ICU as much as possible. But our expectation is we still need additional measures depending on how much is circulated in our communities to keep everybody safe. So I think that's, and vaccine are one of those layers, but we also need some additional measures depending on case rates.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Prickett and Dr. Kalila Gates, both with Northwestern. They're both pulmonologists, and they are starting a new podcast, sort of talking about medicine. They're also friends on the front lines, they say. And Dr. Gates, can you talk about, did you get to know each other as physicians? How did you get to know each other and develop this friendship in the past few years?
Absolutely. So our friendship actually transforms 10 plus years. So we're fellows together. So we did our pulmonary critical care fellowship together with Dr. Russell. And we've been fast friends since that first day of fellowship orientation. So we've come to know each other as trainees, as friends. We saw each other's children delivered. We have attended each other's weddings. And so our friendship has grown over that time, and COVID has strengthened that bond that we already had, because we are three people who have gone through pretty big life things together that we were then prepared and willing to go through this COVID pandemic together. And so we were able to lean on each other, provide the encouragement that we each needed to get through these last 2 years or so. And so it's just been this natural transition or blossoming of our friendship that has been one of the things that have kept me going through this whole thing.
Do you, you've mentioned children a couple of times, and I understand you're both parents. Dr. Prickett, what's it been like parenting, especially in those early days of the pandemic when, you know, doctors were doubling up on the PPE? There was even concerns that masks might be in short supply.
I mean, so to be honest, to all the parents out there, it's tough. That was probably just as hard of a role as I had at home, and trying to keep everyone, you know, feeling comfortable, trying to home, you know, the remote learning was a challenge. I have three boys all in elementary school. And so then you and you know, kids don't know what's going on either. We didn't know. And so trying to balance that with my role at work. And then there was concerns early on. Like I had concerns about enough PPE. I still have a drawer of old N95 masks that I cannot bring myself to get rid of. I kind of one at a time, I'll think about it. But we had major fears about bringing it home to our kids and really tried to balance. But it was just as hard as it was to be a critical care doc during those early days. I feel because it was just as hard to be a parent for all of us that were doing this. So if you thought it was hard, understand we did as well. And it was a challenge. And I think a challenge that we all as a community and society experienced, and we need to support each other in that recovery from that time.
Dr. Gates, I know we've talked to some healthcare workers on the show who decided to live apart from their families during the pandemic. You know, maybe if they have a spare room in the house, if they have that open to them, they would take that. Some paramedics even sent their kids to live with their grandparents for a while. I wonder if that's something you felt you had to do early on.
So that was definitely a conversation that was had between my husband and myself. We had clear things we needed to do. I would come through the basement. I would disrobe. I would jump into the shower before I could even come to the family. And so the question really was, well, do I stay isolated the entire time or do I isolate if I was exposed, et cetera? And it became so stressful on my family to be isolated in the additional bedroom that I distinctly remember my husband saying, we have to keep things as normal as possible for our daughter. He said, so if you go down, we're going to all have to go down so that we can somehow maintain some sense of normalcy for her. And so after that moment, there was no isolation. I still, to this day, come in through the basement and disrobe before joining the family if I'm seeing, you know, ICU patients. But otherwise, we made a conscious effort that we couldn't allow the pandemic to disrupt our core family.
Yeah. Go. Did you want to add something to that, Dr. Prickett? Or?
Oh, I was just going to say, I actually did isolate for about 2 weeks. It was a hard decision, but actually I saw the first patients at Northwestern, and it was at a time where we didn't have testing. And so I can completely attest that it is hard. And I, you know, my youngest was 6 at the time. So it was really hard to be away. It was clearly a safety measure for that first go round. And then we had to come to the same decision. Like we're going to take as many precautions as possible to ensure safety, but understanding that mental and emotional health was equally as important to my family and our, you know, my little bubble that I had going on. And so, but it is not easy. And many of us did isolate in different ways, but quarantining probably had to be the hardest part of it for just as you can imagine, being away from your kids and your loved ones, even, you know, is not an easy thing to do.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about training for a pandemic. Dr. Gates, when you did your residency and fellowship, was the idea of a global respiratory pandemic on your radar? Is that something that you rehearsed for, so to speak?
Absolutely not. There is no training for a pandemic, right? So a couple years before, we had the Ebola kind of concern, and there was a little additional training that we had to go through in case we got an Ebola case. But there was no training for this COVID pandemic. But the beauty that I see in this pandemic is we stuck to what we were trained to do. And that was provide good evidence-based critical care medicine and stick to the book and not try new things just because this was a new pandemic. And I, to this day, maintain that we were able to provide care and very good care to our patients very early on by just sticking to what we had been trained to do. And not that we were 0% mortality, but our mortality was better because we made a conscious decision as a group. We're not going to stray from what we know works until we find out more information. And so to some extent, yes, we were well-trained because we were well-trained in critical care medicine, but there is no training available for this at all.
All right, we need to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Kalila Gates and Dr. Michelle Prickett, both pulmonologists at Northwestern Medical Group. They're also on the faculty at the Feinberg School of Medicine up there. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to continue. And I should also mention they are hosting a new podcast called Get Better, in which they talk not only about their own experiences as physicians during the pandemic, but also where they learn about other medical topics. That's from Northwestern. This conversation is going to continue again after a short break. If you want to join us, if you have a question, 800-222-9455 is the number to call, 800-222-9455. Then later in the program, we're going to be talking about two men working to make Peoria into a cross-country skiing destination. That's coming up on the 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Prickett and Dr. Kalila Gates. They're both pulmonologists at Northwestern Medical Group and on the faculty at the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern. They're also hosting a new podcast called Get Better with a third colleague, Dr. Susan Russell, who is treating patients this morning and is not with us. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Before the break, Dr. Gates was talking about being able to fall back on training. Yes, maybe you weren't, specifically trained to deal with a global respiratory pandemic, but obviously you know a lot about pulmonary function and you can fall back on that. But, you know, this pandemic has been polarizing in a way I think a lot of us did not expect. And Dr. Prickett, I wonder if you have treated people who maybe didn't even believe they had COVID or were demanding treatments maybe you felt were not appropriate or evidence-based?
I think we've all experienced that to different extents. And again, this is something very new. And so it stands to reason that people will be skeptical of what we're doing, how we're doing it, what they have heard out there. So I think my experience is just being open and honest and having conversations about what you do know, what you don't know, and why you're going to do what you're going to do based off the science that's available to you and the understanding that you have. So medicine is always a dialogue with patients. It should never really be a monologue. Most of the time when patients are, I don't want to say disagreeing, but they're seeing it a different way, we can come to a resolution with just an open discussion about where their information is coming from, what their thoughts are on it, and how we can best address it. And I think COVID, just because of all the newness to it, the lack of in-person discussions, usually, we get to talk to family members that are at the bedside. There were so many different elements that the focus on communication became all the more important.
And Dr. Gates, I wonder about you. I know from my own family experience, we've all been pretty grateful. The patients have been pretty grateful for specialists when they are critically ill. But I wonder, is that your typical experience? And has that been different in some cases during this pandemic?
So as Michelle pointed out, we've had our challenges given the misinformation that has been out there about COVID and the polarization that has occurred with this pandemic. But I think that we stay true to our beliefs of medicine, that it is a shared process. We are here. We have taken an oath to help people, and we are committed to sharing the appropriate information and really approaching health and an individual's health and care as a team. And oftentimes it may take a little bit extra effort or a little bit more conversation than perhaps typical. But my experience has been that when we can reach an understanding of where we each are coming from, we can find a common place to exist in care. And I think that has been our approach through this entire pandemic.
Dr. Gates, I wonder if you're seeing long haul patients in your practice.
We are absolutely seeing long haul patients. From a pulmonary standpoint, we see exacerbation of their underlying chronic lung disease. We also see people who previously had no underlying pulmonary issues that then have developed kind of chronic symptoms, cough, shortness of breath, et cetera. And because this pandemic is new, we are learning with our patients, which is very difficult because our patients are seeking answers from us. And we don't have all the answers right now. And so I often find myself offering what I can, but explaining to my patients that we don't know all of the answers and we're trying and we're going to be with them through this process, and just continuing to build the trust to get them through and find out the information that we need for the future.
I think a lot of us are concerned about this, right? Death is not the only endpoint of COVID-19 about which we should be worried. I heard a physician say even a couple of years ago. Dr. Prickett, what questions do you still have about long COVID? And has there been any progress in treating this?
So I think it's a great question and one I've been asking. And so you're absolutely right. Death is not the only outcome. People need to function and we need to understand that. And we are learning as we go. So the questions I have were really, you know, I had a bird's eye view of the ICU and what happened to people that were critically ill. But there's this whole other layer of folks that had milder disease and still have chronic conditions. So fortunately, we actually set up a comprehensive COVID center here at Northwestern, which is multidisciplinary, meaning, you know, it's one of our pulmonologists and the ICU docs, several of our pulmonary team, but also neurologists, endocrinologists, rheumatologists, and cardiologists that are working together to really kind of take care of the whole patient and understand what's going on. So part of our podcast, I did an episode with the neurologist that heads the neuro COVID clinic, and how they're looking to really understand how this disease is occurring in long COVID from multiple forms. So for me, it's an ongoing learning opportunity so that we can have better discussions with patients. And that's just one way that we've done it.
And if I may add, please. I think that we focus a lot on the physical aspects of COVID, but COVID has had significant mental and emotional aspects on our patients who have had COVID, but also who have just had to deal with the pandemic and what social isolation has brought. I have patients who they're otherwise okay, but the anxiety of having had COVID and what does that mean for them is actually probably the major component of their presenting symptoms. And so I think we have to definitely make sure that we broaden our idea of how COVID has impacted people to include emotional and mental well-being as well.
All right, I want to go now to the phones at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And Paul is on the line from Urbana. Paul, you're on with Dr. Gates and Dr. Prickett.
Hi, this is kind of a basic question, but if people are having some kind of symptoms, would a blood oxygen meter like be an early detector of whether it's COVID or not if you don't have a test, or would something you could have on hand? When does that present?
Okay, thank you for the question, Paul. Dr. Gates, do you want to take that one? And I presume he's just talking about the little fingertip thing you can get at the drugstore?
Absolutely. So, Paul, thanks for the question. Unfortunately, the low oxygen level is actually farther down the course of the COVID infection. So if there are any concerns that you may have COVID infection, the best way to confirm that is to get a COVID test, whether it's an antigen test, which is what we do at home, or you go and get the kind of DNA PCR test at the testing sites. But we do advise patients who are COVID positive, who are at higher risk of having low oxygen, that it might not be a bad idea in the course of the COVID infection to kind of sporadically check their oxygen levels. And if they get to a certain point, to go in. But it's not, definitely should not be used as whether or not I have COVID. The only way to answer that question is through testing.
And when you say it's farther down in the process, I mean, there's a lot of medical pharmaceutical interventions that can be done now before a patient hopefully would not get to that point, right?
Absolutely. So what we see is if people are going to develop severe COVID illness, it typically happens in that like day 7 to 10 range. And so that's the range where we're really paying attention to what's happening. You're either going to start to improve and have a mild course, or we're going to have more severe disease. Our therapies, like our monoclonal antibodies and the antiviral therapies, the sooner the better. And that's why testing is important, because if you're having symptoms, we want to get those things started in the first 48, 72 hours to actually have maximum benefit.
All right, Paul, thank you for calling in with that question. If anyone else out there has a question, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Prickett and Dr. Kalila Gates of Northwestern Medical Group. They're both pulmonologists there. And, and as I've mentioned, you're both also teachers. And Dr. Prickett, I wonder if the pandemic has led to any sort of big picture changes in the way you teach the next generation of doctors that are coming up now?
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm not a dean like Dr. Gates, but I'm just a regular professor. And I, you know, teaching has always been, I think, why you work in academics is to teach. That's one of the draws. But, you know, my stance has really been focusing on not just the science, right? I think we teach the science. COVID really brought out that we need to teach about the whole patient and talk about communication and how do we connect with families? How do we take all those elements that come with patient care? Because it's not just about, I'm going to give you meds and you're going to be okay. There's so much more to that. And so, you know, my focus has been more of understanding that everyone comes to the table at a different place. And so trying to make sure that if I'm talking about something, everyone's really taking something away from it. And at the very end, we're going to talk about that patient that we're caring for as an individual, as a human. So we always talk about, tell me about the who before you tell me about the what. So who are they before we're talking about what they're here for? So my, you know, that's been my kind of takeaway, is we really need to focus on the humanity as well as, you know, making sure everyone is understanding what, you know, what the science and the data support.
And Dr. Gates, what about you? I don't know if you have any additional perspective on that, or if maybe, you know, the idea of health disparities has been elevated in education in the past couple of years. I know it was there before, but.
Absolutely. So I think there are two parts to that question. The first part is that we have seen a very drastic change in medical education. We have an entire second years now, who experience an entire curriculum on Zoom. And that is unheard of. And so what we're still sorting out and understanding what learning an entire year of medicine means for those students on Zoom. And we are actively making changes to our curriculum to offset any troubles that may exist. The additional thing in medical education is that, as you have pointed out, COVID didn't create health disparities, but COVID created a situation in which we were forced to talk about, educate, and figure out how to overcome health disparities. And so COVID has given us another platform to really kind of give to our students the tools and the skills necessary to ask the questions, so that, you know, in 10 years or the next pandemic, we aren't still talking about health disparities.
The mask mandate is going to be ending, scheduled to end on Monday of next week. It's still supposed to be worn in schools and on public transit and healthcare settings. But Dr. Prickett, we had a conversation on the show a week or two ago about what this means for patients who can't mount a good immune response and those who are, you know, not too young still to get vaccinated, for example. How are you feeling about the mask rule ending?
So I understand the benefits. I also understand why people want to get rid of it so quickly. So I can see both levels. I think what I view masks are, they have been one of the key strategies to really reduce transmissions. Vaccination is fantastic, but it doesn't work for everyone. If you are immunocompromised, you've got, you know, had a transplant, are undergoing chemotherapy or on dialysis, whatever that reason that your immune system can't mount a robust response, you need to have that extra layer. And so masking individually provides some level, masking kind of universally provides an additional level. So part of me really just wants to emphasize, as we talk about, you know, taking away some things, I think we want to work toward that, but we also, sometimes someone's always going to need a winter coat, right? Like this is a layer of protection that we need to look to say we're going to keep people healthy. So again, I think it's going to matter on where our numbers are to say how big of a coat do you need? Do you need a coat at all? But there's always going to be some people in our community that are going to need that extra layer of protection. And I don't want us to forget about them. And I don't want us to say, oh, well, that's their issue. It's all of our issues. We are in this together. And we should look at masks as a cultural norm, right? So let's do this to be helpful for everyone in our community, especially those that are at risk. Can we lighten it up moving forward? I think so. But I think it has to be based off of the science of, are the cases going down? Does everyone have access to vaccinations? You know, how can we just help support each other? So again, we can go back to normal as soon as possible. And I think masking on some level, we should embrace that to say we want to keep it for some times and understand when we can loosen up in others.
And this may be our last question. We're almost out of time, but Dr. Gates, I wanted to ask you about this topic specifically as it relates to schools, right? You talked about your family life earlier and the decision you had to go through about, you know, isolating, not isolating from your family. What do you think about the idea that the mask mandate could be ending soon in schools and the costs and benefits of children with and without masks?
I think that, as Michelle has pointed out, I can see the benefits of unmasking, but I think that we definitely need to have a more global community-focused approach. And so in schools, there may be children who can't get vaccinated or who have conditions in which masks aren't possible for them. And so when we take a more community approach of what's best for all involved, I think that may be an individual kind of school classroom decision, but this can't be an all or none response. We have to remember that there are people in our communities that we probably owe it to them to protect them. And so as we move forward with these mask mandates, I just encourage us to recognize that there is a transition and there's no one size fits all in this. And we need to provide each other the grace and the understanding and respect as we move out of this pandemic.
Dr. Khalilah Gates is Assistant Dean of Medical Education at the Feinberg School of Medicine, and Dr. Michelle Prickett is Associate Professor and Medical Director of Respiratory Care at Feinberg. They're both also pulmonologists with Northwestern Medical Group. Their new podcast is called Get Better, made with their friend and colleague, Dr. Susan Russell. Dr. Gates, Dr. Prickett, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your experiences with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up after a short break, we're going to be talking about cross-country skiing in Peoria. We didn't get quite as much snow, at least in parts of central Illinois, as we did in the past couple of weeks, but it's still not too late. You may get another chance to go skiing this winter. We'll talk about how two men in Peoria are trying to make that city a destination for cross-country skiing. Coming up after a short break, stay with us.